You're listening to the Movies on the Brain podcast.
I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chad Metz.
And for his Return of the Jedi appearance, T-Bob Hebear.
Yo, what's up, guys?
All right. So we're three friends. We're going to sit around and we're going to talk movies for a little while.
Yeah.
As promised, Jim from IGN did stop by. And we will have that interview for you later in the show following our normal rundown.
It's a great interview. Great interview. Everybody should definitely check it out. Y'all did an excellent job.
Well, we appreciate Jim for stopping by and taking time, more time than he normally would otherwise give. So we appreciate him in making that happen. But we've got a lot of new movie news to talk about. A lot of crazy things have happened in the world of movie news. So Chad, Geostorm. No.
Come on.
Yeah.
I told
these guys earlier that my wife is seriously considering going to Geostorm tonight after we leave this podcast.
So we will keep the
is
running.
Is there at least some, I know you don't want to talk Geostorm, but I feel like you've already cruised across the Rubicon.
Yeah, I've already lost this battle.
Is there at least some comedic value?
Oh, there's tons
of
comedic value. There's Gerard Butler as a prick for like the entire time. And apparently like we're so well off in the future that despite the fact that we have a weather-controlling satellite, we can also afford to put one person on a space shuttle and fly them up to the space station.
All right.
So we can burn that much rocket fuel now that we can just send one person up in a space shuttle.
All right, watch out, dude. I don't want any more Geostorm spoilers.
Yeah, yeah. Watch Deep Impact and Armageddon. You'll have all the spoilers that you need, sir.
I love Deep Impact.
Yeah, Deep Impact is a far better movie than Armageddon. This has been my stance for about 20 years.
Wow.
Because Deep Impact's more realistic and more to what politically would actually happen.
But
in
no better moment than the Aerosmith song. I mean, no Aerosmith.
Don't miss a thing, yeah. All right, so let's start off our podcast with a man that I told you was not a very good writer, not a very good producer, and not a very good director. And yet Universal chose to give him the keys to a very expensive franchise anyway. This week, we learned that Mr. Kurtzman and Chris Morgan, who already had the Fast and the Furious franchise, retrospectively probably decided they needed to go take care of Tyrese and the headaches that he was dealing with on the Fast and the Furious franchise. This week, we learned that the Dark Universe is dead. Let us all have a moment of silence for the Bill Condon Bride of Frankenstein movie that will never happen. The Javier Bardem portrayal of Frankenstein that will never happen. The Johnny Depp portrayal of the Invisible Man that will never happen.
Nah, who cares?
And the potential of Angelina Jolie playing Frankenstein's bride. All of which will not happen. Although they do have very nice office space that is decorated with monsters that no one will now use. Let us take a moment to silently reflect on the death of the Dark Universe.
So they killed it.
They killed it. The Mummy killed it.
Yeah, the Mummy did kill
it. Your thoughts, sir, on the death of the Dark Universe?
First, let me say, this is like the longest victory lap ever, because every time this dude's name comes up, it's like, I told y'all he was terrible. And I defended him. I tried to be the nice steward, and this is what I get. I have to hear this every time Alex Kurtzman's name comes up.
Very few people affiliated with the Amazing Spider-Man movies have gone on to do good things.
I'll give you, Andrew Garfield's fine. Emma Stone's fine. Mark Webb, you can debate about. Yeah, everybody else is kind of bad. But, this is really bad. I know Universal's not hurting for money thanks to, you know, the fast cars and stuff.
And Jurassic World.
Yeah, and Jurassic World. But,
and Minions.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, they
Minions
are not hurting
for money.
Minions
is probably Prince money.
It does. The last three.
Billion-dollar movies, the last three.
God, man.
Yeah, the quietest billion you ever see, because I forgot.
And that's not even getting into the merchandise.
That's
no.
Wow.
So
good on those two French brothers.
Yeah, for sure. Illumination Entertainment. They also made Secret Life of Pets.
That movie's
terrible.
Yes,
my wife made us buy that one night. She hated it. I hated it too. It was terrible.
It's Toy Story with dogs.
But that's no. How dare you?
It is the exact same story as Toy Story.
How dare you
with dogs
even mention Toy Story in the same sentence as Secret Life of Pets?
So y'all are both right. This is Toy Story with dogs, and yes, you should never mention it in the same sentence. Okay. With Toy Story.
I'm okay. I just that offended me a little bit.
As it should. But Yeah, this, you're basing, this is why you shouldn't build a universe before a movie comes out.
Yes. It's a little embarrassing for Universal, right?
Like, really? Like, the week before the movie came out, they had a picture with all these people that were going to be in all these different movies. And they're like, Johnny Depp and
Javier Bardem.
Javier Bardem, and you had the mummy, Sofia Boutella, and
Tom
somebody
Cruise.
Else. Yeah, and they're all standing in this picture like, this is the Dark Universe. And then this movie comes out, it's like, y'all just forget this picture even existed.
Here's the problem with that. So, I do a sports talk show, and a lot of times I see this in a lot of fans where they don't want to respect the process, right? They want the universe. They want the ending. They want to reach the moon, but like they don't want to build this spaceship that gets you there. Like, you have to put in the dirty work. You have to establish the base building blocks, take slow, small steps, and eventually build something. It's frustrating when you see that. Very much putting the cart before the horse.
Well, see, fans can do that because fans have nothing to input in. They just enjoy it. So, yeah, they can be irrational and say, give me this now. I don't care about other stuff. It's when the people putting it together are like, yeah, let's do that. And that's why you end up sitting with the fans. So
that's a very good point.
That's why you end up with a movie that is not is a little bit better than Dracula Untold.
I've seen neither one of these movies, and
I mean, it's the best elements of that movie, as I talked about back in June. The best elements of that movie are the horror elements, the creepy churchyard with the fog. Like, that's the best element of that movie. Everything else is like, we want to move away from Brendan Fraser, yet you're kind of going to do a lot of the same stuff, and you're going to shoehorn in Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde for some odd reason, because he's now running a Nick Fury-like organization.
Well, that's the universe.
Yeah. Right.
That's the universe shoehorning itself in the movie, right?
Right. And it's like,
I will say this, I did not see The Mummy, full disclosure, but hearing you talk about it, and what people said about it, the most disappointing point is that, like, if you're going to build this universe, make it a, like you said, a true horror universe. Make that a scary movie, not an action movie.
And the thing is, if they're going to bring in Blom, that will work.
Yeah, but
That will work. He gets horror, and he gets budget. He moderates his budget. He does things right properly. He's about to make a whole lot of money with the Unbreakable sequel, Glass. Like, that would work.
But
that would be true horror.
Now, before this is a world before it comes out. But you say horror, and you know that they're trying to build a movie franchise, a blockbuster franchise. So horror and that doesn't tend to go hand in hand.
But
that's a good point.
But horror to what level? Like, are we expecting these movies to make $800 million apiece, or are we expecting them to make $600 million apiece?
Like, I think
the first phase of Marvel movies did not do, you know, $1 billion each. The first phase of Marvel movies all did somewhere between $280 million domestic and $600 million domestic. Like, none of the $500 million domestic. None of them were like. It wasn't until you had that Avengers in that first moment where you became the third highest grossing movie of all time.
But that goes to what T-Bob's saying, is that they see the end result is this big pot of money right here, and they don't want to work their way up to it. They're like, no, we can do this right now.
And they definitely made a movie, like, they wanted to make the $800 million movie. Like, and that's where they probably messed up. They should have been tighter, focused, cheaper, lean into the horror.
Yeah. And again, like, I have no doubt that Bill Condon's Bride of Frankenstein would have been a much better film. I have no doubt that whoever they would have gotten for Invisible Man or Creature from the Black Lagoon would have done perfectly fine. The problem is when your first movie turns them basically into superheroes and does the action adventure thing, it kind of just dies in the middle of the summer.
Yeah, and moving the date probably would have helped too.
Also, not casting Tom Cruise, who basically took over that set from an amateur director who had no power and no authority, and tried to save it because he was afraid of how it would make his image look.
But that's a double-edged sword, because we know that now, but when this universe was announced, people were like, I don't know. And then they say, oh, we got Tom Cruise, and it's like, oh, really? And it caught people's attention. So,
and I told Scott Calora of IGN, back when they first announced this, that if they're going to go in the Dracula Untold direction and make movies like that, they are not going to be successful.
You're right.
I mean, it's... And now the craziest part about this story is they have a whole office building. a whole office building decorated with horror stuff and monsters and things that were supposed to be the Dark Tower off the Dark Universe offices.
That
building's sitting empty.
That is the ultimate sign of hubris. And exactly what we just talked about. You want to talk about putting the cart before the horse. You build an HQ before you've ever even, like, you build your secret lair before you've ever even taken over any land. That's, I don't know. That's terrible.
Well, I mean, I've got my secret lair, but that's because I have my squirrels and penguins, and we're plotting world domination. All right. Let's move on. So, Chad, there's a movie coming out in February. It makes people exceedingly happy with every new piece of footage and photography that we get. Your thoughts, sir, on the one sheets for Black Panther that dropped this week?
Y'all can't see the smile on my face. Y'all can, but not the rest of y'all. I didn't know these were coming. I was just sitting on Twitter, and it's like, there's a tweet from Chadwick Boseman. It's like, all hail the king or something. I forget what his tag said. And I opened them like, oh, this is cool. I didn't know this came out. And then everybody just proceeded to drop one of their characters. And I'm like, oh, this is great. Because Marvel, recently, the posters haven't been, before Ragnarok, the posters haven't been the best. It's been a whole bunch of, like, shoddy Photoshop and stuff.
Yeah, that throne room picture. Is that the one where he's
that gonna... That Black Panther throne room picture, that is awful.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I agree.
This is really simple. It's just a headshot of each character.
In their costume.
In their costume. They're not doing anything overly dramatic, and they have each have a different tagline. And it is beautiful in its simplicity, and the pictures speak volumes, particularly when you get to the other characters. Like, my favorite one is of Zuri, his sister, and her tagline is my brother's keeper, and she has her little gauntlets that look like panthers, and I'm like, I can't wait to see her beat somebody up with those. So, and as it does when Black Panther stuff drops on Twitter, the Black Twitter, as it's so called, was lighting on fire because they were all incredibly hype. And it's just this movie, particularly in the social media space, is like really a community thing. So anytime anything for it comes out, everybody's happy about it. And it lasts all day. And we're all like, let's get to February now. So that's where I was at all day yesterday. I'm like, I can't wait for this movie because it's going to be a communal experience. And it's going to be different in that way than some of the other Marvel movies.
I just looked up the posters when you were talking about it. I think you described them perfectly, and they are really badass. Now, I did, though, and so when I went and saw Ragnarok the other night, I think I saw a trailer that I hadn't seen before. I didn't love the trailer for some reason. It's something, I like the music way better in the first trailer I'd seen, but one of the main problems, and this is really nitpicky, and it's such a small window from which to view it through, but Michael B. Jordan had like two lines in that preview that just, I don't know, man. They
gonna watch the world burn.
Yeah, man. Like, what? Like, and maybe they sell the character. Like, maybe, like, he's supposed to be kind of like cheesy or not really selling it. I don't know. I'm obviously going to give it a chance, but that those two Michael B. Jordan lines were a little shaky.
See, I've heard you're not the first person to say something about his lines. The first comment I saw about it was that, you know, he doesn't have an accent. So I think that's what makes his stand out from everybody else's, because everybody else has their Wakanda accent, and he is just talking just like, you know, an American guy. And that part of it is that's a whole story issue.
Yeah, that goes along with being banished.
Yeah, he didn't grow up here. He didn't grow up in Wakanda. He grew up in America, and that goes into his
I wonder if anger. That is playing into why it's kind of standing out in my head. That's interesting. I hadn't even considered that.
Yeah, because, I mean, out of all the people that talk, I think it's, you get a little bit of Martin Freeman, like, Claw, Andy Serkis, he says, like, one line, and everybody
Dude,
else.
Andy Serkis looks like he's, might be getting a little testosterone or HGH. My boy, my dude is thick in this movie, dude. He looks kind of jacked, actually.
I mean, I'm sure he walked on the set of the Age of Ultron, he's like, oh, Chris Evans and Chris Hemsworth, and y'all are putting me in Black Panther, and, oh, Chadwick Boseman looks like this, and y'all have these big, okay, all right, just give me my shot.
Yeah, he had to get jacked up.
Yeah, I can't mocap this, right?
So, I should say this about Michael B. Jordan's character, too, is that aesthetically, I'm very into it. I liked the kind of side dread that he's got going on. I liked what I saw in the preview. But, yeah, I don't. I guess I hadn't considered that's maybe why those lines stood out to me. I'm going to give it a chance. We'll see.
Well, speaking of Thor Ragnarok, what was your opinion of the very important Marvel movie?
Are we getting to spoilers?
We've already done a spoiler cast on it, so yes.
Okay, so, well, is that separate? So we are okay. I'm still going to talk in, I guess, well, I don't know how detailed we'll get, but I really enjoyed it, dude. I enjoyed it far more than I expected to, and I think that, So, have you ever heard of Neil Gaiman's Norse mythology? I think that's what it's called, right? Or yeah. So, all it is him kind of doing like a modern retelling, or not even modern, just his own retelling of Norse mythology. And in that, listening to that through Audible.com, I love books on tape. But listening to that earlier this year, one thing that stood out to me was how Thor traditionally really is like the ultimate, just high school jock bully. Doesn't take anything seriously, can kill anything, can drink anything, but like has almost no emotions, like just like, hey, whatever, bro, I just, you know, oh, this thing's big, I'm gonna kill it. And while, so I think this new Thor Ragnarok movie, they kind of brought that, but like took away a bit of the abrasiveness, like they brought that kind of like, I am just so powerful that I don't really care about like anything, I just want to do whatever. But then they give him, they infuse him with some good qualities, which obviously make him a protagonist and make him a bit more likable. But I did like how when it opens up, he's in this terrifying situation. He just doesn't give a damn. And that could come off as like cheesy or trying too hard. But I thought it actually, in a weird way, respected like the base Thor character and how flippant he kind of was. And I don't know. I thought it was really funny. I think that leaning so heavily into the sci-fi weirdness was an excellent idea. I didn't think Jeff Goldblum was going to work in the preview. Jeff Goldblum really works for me, man. He really, really worked for me. I thought it was...
It's a tie.
It's a... Well, okay, so is that what you... And this comes up in the interview later with Jim. Is that what... What were y'all referencing? Was it the second Stinger you were referencing?
No, I was referencing the Foundations joke.
What is the Foundations joke?
The one at the end where they're having the big long Paul shot as Sutter is destroying all that is Asgard, and you cut to a shot of the director as a rock monster going, as long as the foundations are still in place, you can rebuild and everything will be fine. And then it explodes, and then never mind, the foundations are gone now.
That is kind of disrespectful. Yeah. I laughed. Right. That's wrong. You're right.
And then the joke after that is, you know, when they're recreating the scene from the first Thor movie where he comes in and he's walking through the people to his throne to take his rightful place. And he takes his rightful place and the music swells and it's supposed to be this big emotional moment. And then it's like, you know, where to, Odin's son? And it's like, you know, purple creature over here with the blade hands. Where do we go?
Oh, he's
like,
dead.
Like, where are you from? He's dead. And then it's this whole thing. Well, I've just been carrying him around for a little while because, you know, I stepped on him. And, oh, wait, he's alive. What was your question again? Never mind. We'll just go to Earth. Like,
that is, I mean, it is all a bit. Okay, so that almost go back to the flippancy?
It does.
That I was just referencing. Like, Thor has no emotions because he is a god. He does not understand what it's like to not be a god. But I would think that he would be a bit more upset.
Your home,
by Asgard being
your
destroyed.
Home has been destroyed.
Yeah,
in and front like of your home eyes for, by your own hands.
Your home for like what, like thousands of years, yes. Right? Like he's lived there for quite a while.
Like he did not. Like he seemed more upset when his mother died than he seemed when like his home world was destroyed.
So that's a good point. So let's I guess they're all playing off of like, you're not supposed to care about Asgard all of a sudden because Asgard is the people, which I don't know.
Yeah, that's another
thing. The whole concept is whatever.
That's another thing that Jim brings up in their spoiler cast on IGN is about, you know, if Odin really did believe that Asgard was not a place, it was a people. At any point over the time of the last 100,000 years, he could have just let Asgard go to hell.
You didn't have to keep defending Asgard. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, wait, so let's talk about the rock monster then, because part of me finds him to be funny. I think he's good comedic relief. I can actually even buy him joking a bit in that situation because he's had such a terrible, violent life that he would just be so jaded against, like, anything. That maybe that's just how he deals with whoever. But a couple of the issues that I have is, why does he know about rock, paper, scissors? Like, does that mean, is that lazy writing, or are they trying to say that rock, paper, scissors is actually like a galactic game?
Yes,
that,
I think
that
that's
everybody
the implication.
Knows. So you don't think it's lazy writing? You think that the implication is that rock? But even that raises all kinds of questions, because scissors are obviously a human,
an earthbound object.
Yes, yes, and the chance for the because I like I said, I loved how they leaned into sci-fi. So, and I hate to reference it because nowadays with this show, I think can be a bit polarizing. But almost lean into it, almost in a more Rick and Morty-esque way, where you're not having your aliens tell human jokes, you're having your alien tell alien jokes that kind of reference human jokes in a way. But that, and then he straight up goes, I mean, I was cool with the South African accent, but then he even threw a brew in there at one point. And why is this rock alien saying brew? Like, using not only a South African accent, but then South African, like, slang.
Kiwi.
Oh, is that Kiwi?
He's from there. He's from New Zealand.
Oh, he's from, okay, and so he's Maori.
Maori, yeah.
Wow. That I have trouble discerning between Australia and New Zealand
and
South African. Yes, yeah. So wait, who is it? So that's the director?
That's the director, Taika Waititi.
Oh man, I didn't know that. That said, it was a good movie. I thought that character was very funny. Those questions, I told my wife, I was like, I think these are probably bugging me more than they should. I just kept thinking about it. But overall, I thought it was very fun, way funnier than I thought. And like, at a time when I thought that I was maybe really starting to slow down on the Marvel movies, Homecoming and this have just been, they've been excellent.
Well, my frame of reference, too, is we have this big, deep emotional moment at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which is treated with reverence and respect for what it has been built to. And then we get this at the end of Thor Ragnarok. And then also, of course, the little trip into Odin's vault, which resulted in the destruction of the hopes and dreams of many fanboys.
Okay, so of the two things, I'm coming to your side on the end of the movie thing. I get it. When I watch it again, I'll probably feel a little
differently. I've seen the movie three times now.
See, I'm still in that first time. So yeah. I'm sure, listening to y'all talk about it, I'm like, well, I can start pointing out these plot holes right here. So I know I'm going to end up doing that. But the thing with the vote, you just got to let it go.
What's the vote?
So when Hela walks into Odin's vault, the first thing she does is says it's fake, and she knocks over Infinity Gauntlet.
Yes.
So that is the thing. In the first Thor, in the background, you see the Infinity Gauntlet. And, you know, because we're nerds, we notice it, and everybody's like, oh, Odin's got the Infinity Gauntlet. But then in Age of Ultron.
So that's how they explain.
In Age of Ultron, Thanos has the gauntlet, and he's like, I'm going to do it myself. So now fans are like, so they're two? What are y'all going to do? Well, this is Marvel's way of saying, no, they're not two, and this is it. This is it. Fake, boom, it's done. We know it's not the real one. Thanos has the real one. It's over. You got to let it go.
It's not bad. I actually, you know what, as far as retcon Band-Aids kind of go, I'm into that. I'm glad they
It was quick and easy
took
and effective.
The time to address it. Because even at the time, I remember thinking like, oh, yeah, that's crazy. That means that they think that they have it protected, and it's not protected.
Yeah, and see, it does that. He didn't even know, and this is what he came up with. See how it works?
Yeah,
we know the other stuff, and we're like, it's funnier to me because I'm like, well, they just solved all this because I know the internet's like, what are they going to do? Done.
I'm also concerned about where Jane Foster and Betty Ross are in the MCU.
Oh, you got to get it up. You got to get it up.
They broke up. They broke up. Or she broke up with him, or he broke up with her, either way.
No, so I mean, look, overall, I thought, like I said, it was really solid.
I love Tessa Thompson. I need more Valkyrie in my life.
Yeah, she was great. Aesthetically, the movie was great. Like, costume design, the prosthetics that
color
they used,
palette.
The color palette was just incredible. Oh, one thing that I wish, though, is that they had not, and they probably couldn't have done this, but that they had somehow not spoiled the Hulk being and I don't know how much background information I've never read Planet Hulk, the comic book, so I don't know if that ties in any way, but like, If they could have had it where you did not know that Hulk was about to come out those doors, that would have been one hell of a surprise. Because like it still worked, even though you saw that all in the preview, it still worked. Which means that if you didn't know, it could have been like one of those home run moments.
The only time that really worked was that Comic-Con footage.
Well, I think the
first time we saw it was the trailer coming out of Comic-Con.
I do think when I watched it, I was like, man, I wish I hadn't known that going in, but. I think that's more of a marketing thing than anything
exactly.
else.
You have
I mean,
to let people
to
know
count,
that Mark Ruffalo is in
the
movie.
Yeah, they have to count the dollars and be like, okay, well, you know what? Actually, even that would be cool. We'll get this much more reach if we... And I should say I really liked all of the Hulk Thor scenes when they were like kind of meatheading out.
Yeah, I can't unsee that.
And then
it's
the
in my head.
And then the Mark Ruffalo Thor scenes are great as well.
Yeah.
Ruffalo is a tremendous actor.
Chris Hemsworth is good, too. And Chris Hemsworth, I think, is jacked.
Yes.
Oh, my God. He's shredded. It's unbelievable. He really is Thor.
Yeah, he is. So let's move on to some DC news. So, Chad, trying to figure out a way to put Dwayne The Rock Johnson in the DCEU. He's supposed to have his own movie that hasn't materialized yet. So they're trying to figure out where to put him. How does Suicide Squad 2 fit you?
All right. I got a whole lot of levels with this thing, but I saw it, and so the plan is, according to this release, is that in Suicide Squad 2, they're going to send Task Force X on this mission to get this unstoppable weapon, and when they find
Kandak?
It...
Kandak? How do you say it?
I don't know how to say it.
Black Adam's
home
country.
Yeah, it's like Kadeek or something. It starts with a K, there's a Q and an I in there somewhere, but... they're going to send him to go find this weapon that's going to turn out to be him. So in theory, just laying that out, it's like, oh, that sounds fine.
And it's a better one paragraph plot synopsis than anything we had from the first Suicide Squad.
True.
Yeah, maybe.
Now, so my first thought was, well, that Task Force X is equipped with a bunch of people that are regular people that have extraordinary skills, and you're going to put them against Superman. Because that's what Black Adam is. He's Superman level power. The problem with the first Suicide Squad was basic human level powers. A goddess with witch powers. These things don't kind of work out that way. So I'm afraid off the bat that we're looking at that like that dynamic again.
Who are we kidding? Amanda Waller was the true villain of Suicide Squad.
She was, but
she's also an idiot. Why did they just leave the heart just sitting out there? Whatever. Well, like, why was... If it really is a goddess with potentially world-ending powers, they did some very lax security.
Well, that's what happens when you get 6 weeks to write a script. You do this stupid stuff. So I'm afraid of that. And then I'm like, well, if you're looking for a movie to introduce Black Adam in, well, why don't you put him in the movie you're already currently in active production on, which would be frickin' Shazam.
Hold on. Black Adam's not in Shazam?
No. Yeah, yes, what? Yes, yes.
What?
Black Adam is not in Shazam.
He is supposed to have his own solo movie.
Yeah, but I mean, that's like where you introduce Black Adam is
in
Shazam.
In Suicide Squad 2, apparently.
Yeah, it's in Shazam, and then, yeah, wow.
Shazam is in active development. Like, they've cast people. They're going to start shooting in
February.
That's
why they just cast the little kid as Billy Batson.
Yeah. Suicide Squad 2 is the next movie supposed to be up in production, and that's supposed to start anywhere between March and June. So you're saying... You have a movie that will be in production already that this character is already tied to, and you're like, nah, we're good. We're going to stick him in this one that he potentially will not fit in.
Now, remind me on Black Adam and Shazam's power base. It comes from the gods, the god Shazam.
The wizard Shazam.
The wizard Shazam.
And their powers are derived from... Shazam is an acronym, and I can't remember everybody.
And there's like seven different gods within Shazam, right?
It's like Solomon, Atlas, Zeus, Athena, something. Yes. There's seven of them, and they derive their power from that. And they basically have powers on par with Superman, like strength.
Except they're
flight.
Magic-based, which always gives them the advantage against Zeus.
Yes. In the New 52, they go more into the magic, like he can do lightning things and stuff. Pre-New 52, the magic was pretty much restricted to the lightning that transformed him, and the famous Kingdom Come, that's how he fought Superman. He just kept hitting him with the lightning, and
He just kept Shazamming?
Yeah, he kept Shazamming, and he would move. And Superman was standing right next to him, and he would just strike him with the lightning, and he just kept doing that. And Superman was, like, on his knees, bloodied and stuff, and it was a pretty cool fight.
Oh, that is a pretty cool fight.
There's a Justice League Unlimited episode that kind of goes into it. That was a pretty good one, too.
I think I remember that. That was pretty excellent.
Yeah. So, Shazam and Black Adam are linked because their powers they're the same power set. They got their powers from the same guy. Black Adam turned evil, hence why the wizard got Shazam in the first place. So it makes sense that he would be there, but for some reason they want to stick him in Suicide Squad too. My thoughts is because Suicide Squad made so much money and you're going to add The Rock to it, so they're like big dollar signs. But
are they going to bring Killer Croc back?
I would think so.
I mean, that's why they won an Oscar, so I guess they will.
I mean, they earned that Oscar. It's just weird to say Oscar-winning movie Suicide Squad.
Yeah, they did. I'd find Killer Croc to be the most offensive cinematic character maybe ever created.
He's watching BET.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, there were more problems. I think they're looking at dollar signs, and if they're looking at dollar signs again, we could be staring at the same type of mistakes again. So I just kind of don't want this to happen. But
now the thing is, like, he could be excellent in a Suicide Squad 2 movie. Like, if you need to have a top secret mission in Kandak, I think that's how you pronounce it, whatever. But, like, if you need to go into this stereotypical Middle Eastern country and, like, get some plans out or get something, but the government can't be seen operating there, then you set up the Suicide Squad perfectly against Black Adam. That could be, I mean, I like Black Adam as a character has always been so interesting to me because at least how I knew him, which I guess was mainly through, like, Infinite Crisis and just a very brief window of his actual comic history. He was just, he was almost more of a world leader than just a true villain. He had his own motivations, which were very understandable. And I think it'd be interesting to position him that way.
Yeah, he became more like that, like, in the 90s. I think he was part of Justice Society at one point. So giving him his own movie and making him, like, an anti-hero, that works. It's just that they'd have to add somebody to Suicide Squad to be able to, like, take him. Because otherwise, this is not a fight. This is done. Like, as soon as he wakes up, it's over. But, I mean, I really like Black Adam as a character, and I think The Rock could do him well. He can do him well. Black Adam's, he's, like, really, really arrogant and really, really regal. So he doesn't even walk on the ground. He just floats. Like, he floats with his arm folded and looks at you weird.
Dah! All right, we're back. Sorry, an alarm went off again. We're back. Okay, so you were saying that he floats around, very arrogant, looks down on people, condescending.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. You summed all that up. I think that's something different to see out of our hero or villain in whatever instance we have. But the Suicide Squad just needs something else to be able to take him. Otherwise, I just won't believe this movie, and I'm going to be really, really mad that he's not Shazam.
Wait, what about Captain Boomerang? Is Captain Boomerang, did he even live? I can't remember.
Yeah, he did. He did. He came back with his little pink unicorns.
What about Slipknot? Will she continue to cry over a sword?
That wasn't Slipknot. That was
Katana.
Katana. Slipknot. Katana. Slipknot died 5 minutes into the mission.
I don't know Slipknot.
They had to show somebody trying to escape and blow their head off.
Oh, that Slipknot. Was Slipknot. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So let's move on. So T-Bob. And Chad, it appears that Sony has all the money in the world, and they wish to blow it on a movie that needs to recreate a new lead because Kevin Spacey's in a little bit of trouble right now.
Mm.
Your thoughts on spending a whole bunch of money to reshoot 10 days worth of footage to remake your Oscar movie and still get it out for December 25th?
I think this is a necessary evil. For those that don't know, this is a movie that's supposed to come out, I think, December 17th, which had Kevin Spacey in the lead. They had, they've had a trailer for this movie.
They've screened it already.
Oh, yeah. They were really far down this process. Like, and the whole thing is Kevin Spacey's aged up to look really old, and the makeup's supposed to be really good. This was like an Oscar bait movie for him. But then he has all of his allegations that have come out, and the studio, rightly so, wants to distance themselves from that. So they've dropped him from the movie. But I guess they feel so strongly about this movie that they're just not going to waste it. They're going to cut him out completely, and they've recast him with Christopher Plummer. So
apparently Spacey only did 10 days worth of shooting.
Yeah, and on this kind of movie, I can see that.
What kind of movie is this? Just for reference, for those who don't know, for some back context.
It's a drama. A drama about, kind of a mob gang land type deal.
Is Spacey, do we know anything about the nature of his 10 days of shooting? Was he, like, actively working with any actors? Was he, like, in some sort of monologue scenario?
No, it was, he is the lead in the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so.
He's the lead in the movie. Wow. Now, apparently, in a rare feat of, like, studio gravitas, Ridley wanted Christopher Plummer to play the role to begin with, and the studio said no. Mm. And the studio wanted brand name recognition, so they went and got Spacey.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's bringing the 80-plus-year-old Plummer in to do the role anyway. So ultimately, the director's getting what he wants anyway.
Yeah, but, nice. But that means that they would have to start shooting, like, now or next week, and... like, they're going to be right up against it for this movie to hit its release date.
Right.
And as of now, they have not changed it. So, they're bringing people back to shoot these scenes and putting Christopher Plummer in there. And we're going to get a whole new movie, basically, in a span of 2 weeks.
And one's already screened. Like, they already screened the Kevin Spacey version for people. So.
Damn. That's crazy.
Yeah.
But there was no winning in this scenario. So.
No, it's toxic right now for anybody associated with this. And rightfully so, but you can't. It could
Move it to spring? Movie. Why not move it to
and
spring?
Keep Spacey in it? I don't think it's going to be.
Not even keep Spacey in it.
It in there.
Right.
Okay, yeah.
Because Christopher Plummer is not winning an Oscar for playing this role. I mean, he's had his time. He's been a very decorated actor. He's one of our living legends. But the whole purpose of conceit of putting Spacey in there was to, A, get brand name recognition, and, two, to give him a shot at winning an Oscar, which he hasn't done since American Beauty. So, another very creepy film now, as you go back and watch.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Mm. So, move it to March. Move it to April. Like, put it out there. Make as much money as you're going to make going up against Star Wars.
What if they can get it done in time, though?
Well, it seems like there's not an issue with them getting it done in time. It's just going to be like you wouldn't be able to do the preview screeners that they sent out to critics and stuff. It's pretty much going to be...
It takes you out of Oscar contention.
Yeah, oh, okay. I think that's what they still want. But it sounds like the week that it's supposed to come out is probably going to be the week they finish it. So, yeah.
That's walking a tight rope there.
That it is. So let's move on to the big Star Wars news. We cover it a lot and end up with Jim in our interview. Rian Johnston, the director of Star Wars The Last Jedi, rumored director of Star Wars Episode 9 before J.J. stepped in and took control, has been tapped by Lucasfilm to direct and write and direct and shepherd a new trilogy, which is separate from the episodic Skywalker saga, and it will introduce new characters from a corner of the galaxy that Star Wars lore has never explored before.
I hope so. I hope that's actually the case.
Your thoughts, gentlemen, on Rian Johnston going from Episode 8 to a nap to working on more Star Wars?
Well, it explains why he didn't take Episode 9. We all thought he was a no-brainer choice for Episode 9. Of all these new Star Wars movies, Episode 9, Episode 8 has been the one that has, we've heard nothing, no bad press, anything from it. Everything seemed to go really well, which indicates that they're really happy with it. So you thought, you know, you're in a crunch. You needed somebody for Episode 9. You got Rian here. He can just float right on over. But now he's not floating right on over. He's going to be in charge of 3 new movies coming out. So that reinforces the belief in Last Jedi. And Jim mentioned it when we talked to him. But then I'm thinking, well, are we really getting something new? Because that's been the whole hang-up with Star Wars movies that are not episodic.
A new Star Wars lore has never been a corner of the galaxy that Star Wars lore has never been has never before explored.
So I take that as face value.
It's hard to I mess up reading stuff all the time. I just. It switched.
I hope this isn't the Obi-Wan trilogy.
No, I mean, you can't. If that's your pitch that you're publicly putting out there, it cannot.
But as Jim said, that was the pitch with the Star Wars anthology films.
Yeah, and they've gone right back to the legacy characters. That's been everybody's complaint with the legacy movies. Like,
well, they had a movie that didn't have any legacy characters in it, and then they went and did reshoots to add the character that everybody loved into it to make it fit.
Yeah, so
which one?
Rogue One.
Rogue One. Yeah.
Who'd they do reshoots at in there?
They added in the Vader stuff that everybody loves.
Particularly that last
scene.
That
wasn't in there at first.
That was Gareth had an entire movie with no Jedis.
Wow. Okay.
And very little use of the Force.
That actually was a pretty good addition.
It's the thing most people love about the movie, but it was added in from a director's vision that originally had no Jedi and there's no God to come and save you.
I understand their hesitance to get away from the legacy characters. And I think if they would have started this off going, you know, legacy story, completely new in the anthologies and flip-flopping it like that, I think they'd be further along and people would be more happy with, the developments. But, yeah, if you take this on face value, this sounds great. But they've told us this before, so is this what we're really going to get? And I think that's what people are going to ask until we know exactly what Ryan's doing for the first one.
I would imagine, I feel like directors are such creative people, I would be pretty surprised if Rian Johnson is just, like, so passionate about Obi-Wan that that's just the story that he really... Like, if I feel like what might have attracted him to this role would have been, look, you are going to be able to really kind of flex within this Star Wars universe in terms of, like, you are going to build the new building blocks of what will... Now, what I do get concerned about... First of all, I'm with you, Chad. My biggest takeaway is that it means that Episode 8's really good, or that they feel like it's very good. And because of that, I'm obviously going to go into this new trilogy or whatever, optimistic. But now we kind of get back to the cart before the horse thing that we talked about earlier. When you're writing a movie, knowing that you're trying to set up a trilogy, what kind of unique challenges does that present? Because, like, one of the reasons why A New Hope is my favorite Star Wars movie, it is one of the only ones that is, like, fully self-contained with a beginning, middle, and end. Like, you get a payoff, there's a conclusion.
There's a medal ceremony.
Yeah, you get, like, a literal, like, happy ending in it. But it is. It's like a full book in and of itself. Whereas a lot of other ones, like even Empire, which is great, obviously.
Leaves you with them floating off.
It's a bridge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Without a destination. So,
and this one's going to be a bridge as well.
Yeah. So I wonder if that new... Yeah, 8 will. Which is just the kind of curse of the middle chapter.
Yeah.
But...
I don't know.
We'll see.
But you and I both know Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people who feel like Two Towers is the best of the three.
Now, what?
There are people who believe that Two Towers is the best of the three because you get all the time with Legolas and Gimli.
And the Killing Countess, that's great.
And
Helm's Deep is great.
Helm's Deep and you know, all of that. There are a lot of people who feel like that's the better movie. And because you get the talking trees, you get, you know, you get Pippin and all of that.
See, I'm just sucker for origin stories because Fellowship is still so close to my heart, but I think Return of Kings. I don't know. Look, my deal with Two Towers is its original cut is probably like a B. The extended edition bumps that up to a B+. Original cut might even be a B-. I don't know. I think it's very good. I think it just suffers from everything that the bridge middle chapters kind of tend to suffer from.
But with this new Star Wars trilogy, which we got into a little bit with Jim, everybody on the internet's gonna want Knights of the Old Republic. They're gonna want to go to a pre-Skywalker time, really a period where Jedis and Sith are about equal. And it's a different corner of the universe. What if they'd come out and decide not to go that direction? I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the EU to pull from.
I'm gonna be happy whatever direction they go, as long as they're not like, we're doing Obi-Wan trilogy, and I'm like, no, you gotta pump the brakes on this. I'm into Star Wars because I like Jedi, I like lightsabers and stuff. So you say Knights of the Old Republic, we're gonna get three movies of that. I'm all on board. But if Ryan says I want to do this, and particularly after I see The Last Jedi, then I'll probably be like, well, if that's what he wants to do, okay, I'll take this ride with him. Particularly if I like the movie. If I don't, then
I think Knights of the Old Republic would be an amazing story to tell and has enough density to get through a trilogy.
I mean, you really can do whatever you want. Right.
Yeah, but then it goes back to kind of what Chad's saying. It's like, is that a corner of the galaxy that's never been explored?
Well, right.
If you like Episode 8 enough, I would be absolutely down if Rian Johnson wanted to go completely new something, whatever. Just
there's gonna be a lot of material in 8 that hasn't been explored before. We know we're getting the Jedi Lithorial. We know we're getting the Book of the Wells. We know we're getting deep nerd stuff from the expanded universe. Like, just because there's a Skywalker involved doesn't mean that there's not elements from that EU that everybody loves so much that they said from the very first press release, we will cherry pick what we want out of this. It's not canon anymore, but we will cherry pick what we want out of this to bring it into our new stories. Like, we know how we talked last time, me and you, T-Bob. Well, last time we were in the studio, we talked about the Jaina and Jason Solo story. Mm-hmm. There are elements clearly of that being played up here between Kylo Ren and Rey. They're taking bits and pieces. You can do new and different and honor that legacy without being like wholly original.
Yeah, and there's always a great point to be made that, like, the basis for a story is what it is. The execution, a lot of times, ultimately, is what decides if it works or not. Like, there are ideas that I think sound terrible, and the director just does an excellent job, and it's like, oh my God, that worked, and ideas that sound great, and then,
like Geostorm.
You know, vice versa.
Oh, God.
Well, I don't know if Geostorm ever really sounded great.
No. It sounded great to somebody. They made that movie.
Yeah.
Dean Davlin convinced somebody to make that movie.
Why are we talking about Geostorm again?
So
I'm bringing it all back.
But I mean, I think the decree or the cry from people has been new, weird, and different Star Wars movies. We need to move away from the Skywalkers. Yeah. We need to move away from the Solos. We need to move away from Darth Vader. That it's a galaxy far, far away. We need to explore the galaxy. And if they're going to do this and they're going to use Knights of the Old Republic or any other EU expanded canon, you know, to do it, then fine. Let's move away from the Clone Wars. Let's move away from Death Stars and let's tell something new.
Yeah.
And he seems to be the guy to do it. I mean, they seem to love him. And like I said, there are definitely elements in Last Jedi that are going to be from the EU that he's going to do really well. And I think that'll set up, you know, some promise going forward with that.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. Me
too. All right, so that'll about do it for this week's episode. Now, stay tuned, because after we conclude this podcast, we are going to have our interview with Jim from IGN. He was gracious enough to give us some more time on this episode. The interview will encompass several different topics, including Thor Ragnarok. Chad got some questions in about Justice League. and I got some questions in on Hollywood's...
gives like a Justice League review of sorts. I mean, without like specific details.
As classy as he can with the embargoes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. No, I thought it was pretty juicy, actually. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. If you want a little teaser for that, it made me feel a whole lot better. Because I've been just angsty teenager for the past 3 months.
Yeah, and I forgot to apologize to him for my Jerry Schwartz little spat there where I got called out. You know, it's a very fun interview, and it's a very exciting interview, and we really deeply appreciate Jim in all his help with doing that. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the Jim interview, and we will be back with you next week, me and Chad will, to talk about a movie that we have been waiting to see for about 2.5 years called Justice League.
God, you let it be good.
All right. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW TigerFan.
At The Mets Theory.
I'm at TBob53.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening. You're all set up, and thank you for your patience.
Jim, can I get a test on your mic real quick? Just test.
I'm sorry, what?
Audio test? Yes, perfect.
Yeah. Hey, it's great to talk to you guys today. I'm sure we'll be talking about all sorts of things related to movies and yada, yada, yada. And
perfect. Thanks, Jim. That is excellent. Thank you, man.
No worries.
All right. Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am...
Hold on, do that one more time because the door just closed. All right, there we go. Now we're good.
Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood. And with me this afternoon is my co-host, as always...
Chad Metz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. As we promised, Jim has struck back. He has returned to grace us with his movie knowledge and his professionalism. How are you doing this afternoon, Jim?
I'm well, thanks. Thanks again for having me, guys.
Well, we appreciate it. Obviously, your first visit went over extremely well, and so with the abundance of movie news going on, we wanted to have you back to get your thoughts and opinions on things. So let's start off with the big news that dropped yesterday. Rian Johnston is the director of Episode 8, and the rumors abounded he might just work on Star Wars movies for another 2 years and do Episode 9. And people were surprised when he was when he turned that opportunity down. Now it looks like we know why he turned that opportunity down, because he's going to be working on Star Wars through the 2020s. Your thoughts on the announcement of a new Star Wars trilogy that is outside the Skywalker legacy, and what it might explore, and what it says about their confidence in Episode 8?
Well, first of all, I think it says a great deal about their confidence in The Last Jedi. I think it's that movie really does look great, and I can't wait to see it. Rian Johnston is a very, very talented filmmaker, which is, frankly, all the more reason why I kind of wanted him to go and do something else besides more Star Wars. You know, you very finite careers in Hollywood, and to spend basically half a decade of one's career doing nothing but Star Wars might sound great to fans, but you know, for a filmmaker with so much promise, I you know, it does take him out of the loop for a lot of other things he could be doing. But clearly, he wants to do this, so I'm sure it'll turn out great. I'll be honest, my initial reaction was kind of a groan, just because I'm like, oh my God, there's just more Star Wars. I love Star Wars, but I felt like, if anything, I think this is a response to the anthology films not really working out. You know, this sort of the whole point of them was supposed to be to go off into other corners of the galaxy and tell new stories, and instead they've gone back to legacy characters with them, or at least familiar situations in the case of Rogue One. So I think it's the most promising part of this is not only Rian Johnston's involvement and sort of not only directing the first of this new trilogy, but being kind of the creative godfather of the whole thing, but also the stated intent, which is to go and explore new parts of this galaxy far, far away. We'll see if they actually stick with that, because that's also what they said about the anthology films, and so far it's been variations on the same legacy stuff.
Right. And, you know, obviously the internet has been abounding with, you know, theories about Knights of the Old Republic and bits and pieces of the Star Wars legacy canon that they would like to see adapted. Any particular thoughts on what you would like to see out of a Rian Johnston standalone trilogy?
Well, I think Knights of the Old Republic is, that's something folks have been wanting for a long time. And I think going even further back, an even longer time ago in the galaxy far, far away, would be very interesting. I would like to see something completely unrelated to the Skywalker saga. But also, I mean, is there anything else going on out there in that galaxy besides the Empire and Jedi and the Force? That could be fun, but I don't know if from a commercial standpoint we're ever going to get away from the Force and Jedi and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, it is interesting, because I actually think that you kind of were a forerunner on the whole Disney drowning us in Star Wars movies thing, because when y'all had y'all's initial roundtable discussion when Disney bought Lucasfilm back in 2012, I remember I've heard that bit of audio several times. You did make a statement on that particular podcast about the possibility that they could saturate the Star Wars market. So you kind of called that one.
Wow. my cynicism is well known and long standing, it seems. So, yeah, I mean, look, it's the whole, like, killing the proverbial golden goose that lays the eggs or whatever that crap is. But it's, you know, I love Star Wars and I want this to be done well, but I just think too much of anything is not necessarily a good thing. Too much sugar in your diet isn't necessarily a good thing. And I hope that it doesn't mean we're not going to, that the film marketplace and just film as a medium can be more than just these giant branded tentpole releases. And Disney is, you know, an amazing company. There's no studio. I think I heard something like this the other day. They're the most successful studio since MGM in the 1930s. And they release fewer movies but have a greater market share. And Star Wars, even more Star Wars, will basically cement that for the foreseeable future between that and Marvel. But it's also a bit of a stranglehold. I mean, it's like, are you guys only going to be making Disney? I mean, only making Marvel and Star Wars movies and Pixar? A little variety to what you can offer is not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, especially back in the day when they were, you know, they had independent distributors and they were financing films through Miramax and things like that, where they were, you know, not really doing all the kid-friendly stuff alone, but doing diverse programming as well.
Yeah, well, maybe they're, you know, they also officially announced their streaming service and that they're going to do Star Wars television, but, you know, maybe their streaming service, since they do want to, maybe saying going to war with Netflix is a little strong, but they want to compete more directly with them. Maybe that is where, you know, maybe something like Queen of Katwe or Million Dollar Arm, instead of getting theatrical releases, you know, those types of films as they had in the past, they're going to be released directly to the streaming service instead. You know, we'll see. They'll be curious, you know.
Well, speaking of the House of Mouse, you guys did an entire podcast on a spoiler cast on Thor Ragnarok. Which,
yes, we did.
Which is highly recommended listening. But I wanted to get your thoughts on the movie overall, its place in the cinematic universe, and why they didn't hold that joke at the end.
Yeah, let's start with the last bit first. That really kind of irked me, because I thought it was very self-indulgent and needlessly, like, it's great fun to, like, poke fun at Marvel and all that. I have no problem with that, but in a movie called Ragnarok about the end of all things, it should have carried more weight. And in the moment of it, to cut to a gag is, to me, was just that bridge too far. It's fine with all the other moments going up to it, but, you know, it's been, 6 years now that we've been, you know, having Asgard and all that. It should have weighed in more, and I just thought that it was needlessly glib at that moment in time. I think what was the other part of your question about?
Where do you think it fits in terms of the quality of the MCU and as far as propelling the plot forward in this overarching narrative?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you guys have, I'm sure you probably have, but read up on the Infinity War footage. I know it kind of leaked out there, but I don't advise people to watch things that shouldn't be released. So saith my lawyer. I think it fits in basically with trying to get Thor more fully grounded on Earth instead of having to keep explaining why he comes back. I fully expect them to probably, if the Asgardians make it to Earth and that Infinity War footage showed that something bad had happened in space, that enough that Thor was separated, that there was some wreckage and he's found by the Guardians, that let's say the Asgardians, they take a page from the comics and they end up like, I think it was like a Broxton, Oklahoma or someplace like that. They end up basically moving Asgard to there. I could see them doing that for one, comedic value, and two, it gives an excuse for Thor to always be kind of at hand if needed, you know, instead of constantly try to reverse engineer some way to get him involved with the other characters.
Which is
especially once the Infinity Stones are or dealt with in the Avengers sequels.
Which is why I thought they introduced Norway, that little plot of land where Odin went off into the sea. I thought that they were pretty much hinting that that was where they were going to end up creating a new Asgard. But as you know, you did the set visit. There was a lot of stuff about, you know, the rural parts of Asgard, crazy hobo Odin. There seemed to be a lot of stuff that didn't make the final film. It seemed like the film kind of changed in reshoots.
I'm not too privy about the reshoots on Ragnarok. If anything, I feel like they were just trying to tighten it up and make it... you could see that their heart was in Sakaar, and that was the part of the movie that worked strongest. So I read it all as just keeping the Thor-Hulk storyline going and banking on the parts that worked, you know, and even if it was kind of egregious, like the amount of time that like they spent with Jeff Goldblum and all that, I think they were just banking on the audience-pleasing moments. I do feel like the Asgard stuff was fairly dull. I mean, Cate Blanchett's fine in it. She chews the scenery, and she's, you know, I'd watch her do anything, but I didn't feel like they really delivered on the character of Hela and what she could kind of do for the MCU as much as they could have. And, you know, they have her and they have Carl Urban. And, yeah, I just didn't think that they did as much with her. As far as sort of any of the other stuff like the tone and all that, I think, you know, Asgard was always meant to be played a little bit more straight. But I don't know. I think it'd be curious to see if there's going to be any deleted scenes, what sort of the movie it could have been, you know. Yeah. But we'll see if Marvel ever releases that stuff.
All right, Chad, I know you had some questions.
Yeah. Hey, Jim, this is Chad.
Hey, Chad.
Well, Brian always gets the fun Marvel stuff, and then he turns it over to me, and I have to bring it all down by talking about DC, as always. And we're sitting here a week before Justice League, and I was one of those people incessantly hitting refresh at 11 o'clock looking for tweets about what people thought about Justice League. Now, I know it's still embargo, so you can't really talk about it, but if you could just say, like, the first part of your tweet just so people have an idea.
I thought it was okay. I think the movie's okay. I think it's more fun than BVS. I didn't eviscerate BVS the way people seem to think I did, or as much as others have. I saw what it was going for. I just thought it was incredibly dreary. This movie is definitely, it's kind of a small miracle that it works in any way, given the sort of pretty tortured production history of it. I'm sure someday somebody's going to write a very interesting book, kind of like The Devil's Candy, on the making of Bonfire of the Vanities about this one.
I've personally volunteered to write the book on both the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the DC Expanded Universe, and the Star Wars Universe. So that I'd like that to
There's
be
There's
going to
be a lot of interesting anecdotes. But I think it when it works, it's fun, and when it doesn't work, there's definitely enough to analyze there. I thought tonally, though, that I went in expecting it to be kind of more tonally all over the place, and it was far more consistent than I expected, and so that was kind of a relief. But, yeah, beyond that, I can't really – I know some of the other folks who tweeted about it went into more detail, but I'm not as comfortable doing that with the embargo in place. But I will say that I liked it-ish. You know, I definitely have issues with it. But it had two jobs, one to cleanse the palate for people who didn't like BVS, and to – make you like these new characters and want to spend more time with them going forward. And I feel like for those two key objectives, it got the job done.
Okay. And speaking as for a lot of people that just want to hear that it's okay, I'm happy with that. So
that might be enough for a pull quote on the poster. It's okay, screams IGN.
Look, as soon as I saw you, I said, it's okay, followed by it's fun. I'm like, I'm done. This is good. We can go watch this and be done and get past this, because it seemed like it's been the goal the whole time was to get this movie out, to move past it, to move forward. And now that we're almost here to move forward, after seeing it, does the vision for DC look any clearer? Because, you know, we've seen in the past couple of weeks, we've had the Vulture Vulture article that talked about what DC wants to do, and we've had another one since then. And every time it comes out, it's like, it seems like they have a path forward, but it always seems kind of murky because we always hearing these different sides of things coming out of Warner Brothers. So does the movie like clear anything up in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, I think what it does is it does make you like these characters again. You know, it makes you want to spend time with them. You want to see more of them, but ultimately it depends on how the movie does commercially. That's going to – there could be a whole new rewrite on the DCEU. I know they're not really calling it that anymore, but I need something. I need an acronym. So I think that it all depends on how the movie does. And I think it'll do well, especially with people saying it's okay. And that the big refrain, the big takeaway, everyone was kind of on the same page, that initial press thing of saying it's fun but flawed. Uh-huh. I think that's good enough for right now. I think it'll be I think people will enjoy it. I just wonder I don't know if it'll do Wonder Woman level money. I think Wonder Woman it was a better movie and far more goodwill towards it built in. People wanted that movie to succeed. I think there are people that want Justice League to succeed, but there are plenty of people who are also so put off or were never on board with it to begin with that I think it's a tougher challenge for that. So I don't think it's going to outgross Wonder Woman, but I think it'll do fine. If it doesn't, then we're going to see what happens there, especially when it comes to characters you know they're going to be making movies about one way or another, characters like Batman and Wonder Woman.
All right. One final question, Jim. So it's been a very busy last month or so of very disturbing stories in regards to workplace behavior in Hollywood. What are your thoughts regarding the Weinstein and Spacey and those revelations? And what do you think can be done as a whole, as a society, not just Hollywood, but as a society, to change the way these behaviors are condoned or accepted and changing the culture, not just in Hollywood, but throughout other workplaces?
No, I mean, that's a good point about the broader cultural sort of necessity there, because, I mean, obviously this is a giant, horrifying issue for Hollywood to deal with, one that, frankly, people have known about and not dealt with it. But, you know, how many times in the news do we hear about teachers, both male and female, who are having sexual relations with students that are minors, or sexual harassment in the workplace? I mean, it's a systemic problem that affects multiple industries. I think you're going to see a lot more. I think social media obviously has done a lot to make up ground for behavior that people probably in the past could have gotten away with because there wasn't that amplification system there for it to be brought to light. You know, we're speaking just hours after Louis C.K. admitted everything that people have been saying on the record for years. But it finally took this New York Times article and everyone going on the record for it to finally be dealt with. I think you're going to see I think the bigger question is not what processes are put in place now, but what about 2 years from now? What about when this isn't in the news all the time? Does it slink back to how things were? I think if anything, you're going to see a lot more people being more mindful of their behavior. That the old days of having a fixer there, like an Hail Caesar or any of that stuff that you would see back in the day, that doesn't really can't really happen now. I mean, it's not going. I don't think it's going to. I think when you see that somebody like Harvey Weinstein brought in former Mossad agents to try and shut up women who he had raped, molested, harassed, I mean, that's fairly scary. I would hope that these other parties that work at the behest of creatures like a Weinstein or Kevin Spacey or whomever are more cognizant of the damage that they're doing despite whatever payday they might get. And I do hope things change. I know people personally who have been, not by Weinstein, but by some other people in the scene who have been affected, and I've myself have heard stories about, I mean, I heard the Rose McGowan story years ago. So that story's been out there for a long time. And, you know, hopefully now there'll finally be some justice. I mean, Harvey Weinstein is a particularly egregious example of this because, I mean, it's such serial criminal behavior, and it's so frightening and just monstrous. The whole, I mean, there's no other way to put it. So hopefully he'll go to jail. And the system itself, you know, reminds me, I'm from Boston, and it reminds me of when the Catholic Church scandal of the 1990s, coupled with the FBI scandal, the revelations about their behavior and how they protected Whitey Bulger for years. It does, you know, I've lived through this kind of thing before in my hometown, these sort of revelations and the shock to the system of it all. And, you know, hopefully this town and this industry will remedy itself, but let's check in 2 years.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, it's a lot easier. It's a lot better off now with, like you said, the amplification and the spotlight of social media. It's not like it was in the 1940s and 50s where you could have the casting couch mentality and horrible things were going on in secret that no one ever found out about. And hopefully that culture of misogyny and bigotry and sexism, not just in Hollywood, but throughout our culture can be reversed and we can move forward in the 21st century. So Jim, promote yourself, promote your podcast, promote your website, promote your Twitter.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Jim Vavida. Obviously, write for IGN.com. I run the movie section over there. I am the host of our own podcast, the IGN Movies Podcast. There's a Facebook page that fans of the podcast started, so you can find that. It's just the IGN Movies Podcast Facebook page. We don't actually have an official page, but thanks to those good folks for getting that started for us. Follow IGN at IGN on Twitter, and you all know where to find us otherwise. We're kind of tough to miss.
Yes.
But thank you guys, for the kind words and for the courtesy of having me on your show.
Oh, for sure. And Jim, I appreciate you as a friend and as somebody who has given me advice and helped me really mold this program and mold my experiences with this. I'm very grateful to you for giving of your time and of your talents to kind of help me out. So I appreciate it.
Of course, man. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks,
have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right.